This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Just over a quarter of a century ago, this month's guest, a suit in a marketing company, was on holiday with his wife in Paris. On their to-do list were the usual suspects, the Eiffel Tower, Notre Dame and some art galleries, the Louvre, perhaps the Pompidou Centre if they had time. As it turned out, they did have time, and our guest came across an art installation which inspired the work that he now does every day, 26 years later. Kia ora and welcome to Sightlines, your guide to the visual arts in and around Dunedin. I'm Sally McMillan, and this show is brought to you on behalf of the Dunedin Public Art Gallery Society. Mark Cowden is a former finance manager, commercial pilot, advertising exec and marketer, but then he gave in to the inspiration that he had at the Pompidou in Paris in the year 2000, and he's never looked back. Mark, welcome to Sightlines.
Thank you, Sally. It's great to be here.
You've been a full-time artist for 10 years now after that sentinel moment at the Pompidou 26 years ago, and now, of course, we all want to know what happened.
Well, as you do in art galleries, I was wandering around looking at things and I found a piece that just caught my imagination. It was by an Israeli artist, Yaakov Agam, but the big thing that caught me was this piece moved as you moved. And as you walked back and forward, it changed and it morphed from one pattern to another.
Fantastic.
And it just intrigued me.
And I think that that particular artist, Yaakov Agam, is the now the winner of the 2026 Israeli Art Prize. And he's quite elderly now, I think.
That's correct. He's, I think, 98 now. So it sort of bodes well that maybe creativity leads to a long and healthy life.
It sure does. You could be with us for a while yet, Mark. And he's been called the progenitor of the kinetic art movement. Tell us about the piece of work that you saw.
So it was a very large piece. It was hand-painted aluminium. It would have been 2 metres by 4 metres. So it was quite big and quite powerful. And as you moved around it, as I said before, the images changed. It was one of those things I thought in my mind, I'd like to have a go at that at some stage. That sort of sat in the back of my mind for a long, long, long time.
Quite a long time. So the work that captivated you was, I think, an example of what's known as lenticular art, which is a variation in scale of what is often seen in plastic postcards. And you call your particular take on this technique multiplanes. How have you adapted that technique to produce the work that you are now making?
Before I'd seen that in the Pompidou, I'd been interested in photography. I'd been a keen photographer for many years, had a darkroom from when I was about 10. And so I understood photography and paper. I'd worked in Xerox for a while, and I'd also owned my own advertising graphic design company. So I was very familiar with print processes and paper. And I actually love paper. It's sort of one of those things when you work with it over the years, you begin to understand all the things that can happen with paper. So I thought, can I do this thing which had been aluminium and large? Can I scale it down and make it out of paper and small? So I experimented around for quite a while and came up with a system that worked for me.
So I think this system and this work that you do, it really represents a collision of some previous parts of your life, which has been many and varied, it's fair to say. You've talked about your photography and some of the techniques, printing techniques and images, creation of images that you mastered, I suppose, as a photographer. And then you've talked about having worked for Xerox and knowing more than the average person about paper and print processes. But I think there's also somewhere in the mix there is you were involved in a graphic design business. How did that play into this?
My role in the graphic design business was from the business side and the strategic side. It wasn't from the art side. But I worked with some very clever artists over the years and obviously absorbed some of their skills along the way. One of the projects we worked on in particular was a job for the Dunedin Public Art Gallery when they hosted the Guggenheim exhibition in the late 90s. And we would have spent 18 months working on that. And I think that massive immersion into the art world possibly helped direct some of my thoughts as well. So it's a case of looking all the way through. There's all these little bits that all just came together. And I think in some ways it's the universe conspiring in some ways that it knows way better than you know. But until I had all those threads, it wouldn't have been possible. So.
No, no. So you finished your last real job, I think about 10 years ago now, and that was when the collision really happened. Tell us about that.
Well, that's right. I was looking at where I was going to go, and I'm one of these people who likes to reinvent myself every so often. And I had thought this might be the chance that I have to become a fine art photographer and become established, and maybe some travel photography as well, because I love travel, and they do go together.
Was there a firm plan?
A vague plan.
A vague plan. Love a vague plan.
Generally, the way I do a lot of things, and in fact, to use an analogy, when we travel, it's a bit like that. We often arrive in a country. We know the day we arrive. We know the day we leave. We have a vague idea of a few dozen things we want to see in the meantime, and we go. We're not any better organised than that, and we let circumstance direct.
An organic process, I think, is what you're referring to. Yes.
Yeah. And I think my art career, and in fact some of my other careers, have probably followed a similar sort of path. I've had a vague direction, but I've been relaxed enough to let it guide me where, let the universe guide me again, if you perhaps like.
And where it guided you to was the creation of these multi-plane works. And for the benefit of listeners who perhaps are listening and can't see, obviously, what we're talking about, it's not a medium that is commonly seen. And when we talk about art, I think, that's made from folding paper, some of us are probably reminded of learning origami at primary school, which was probably about the same time that we were learning three blind mice on the recorder and making plasticine stick figures, so not necessarily a high level of sophistication. I feel compelled to clarify that the process that you are working with is a bit more complicated than that. Can you describe, Mark, first of all, what a finished multi-plane work looks like?
It's folded sheets of paper, and it's hard to describe without seeing them, but think of like a Venetian blind. From one side you see the back, from the other side you see the front, and as you move back and forward you get a changing view. They're very crisp and sharp. So the process that I use is quite technical and sort of quite engineering, and I think for some of the people who like them, some love the content, the colours, the layout, and often, particularly the men, love the technical engineering aspect of them.
Yes.
I've had architects approach me and want to know if I can do things in conjunction with them, that they see that structural form in. And I think that's part of their charm, that they cover both camps, but they certainly are a bit of a handful to work with.
Indeed. So I think you start with a boldly coloured, high contrast graphic image. Do you create that image as the starting point?
I create that image using a variety of techniques depending on the image. Some started off painted, some start off as photographs, some start off in a computer.
Right.
So, and they get blended and mixed together to come up with a result.
So you print it onto, this is where your paper comes in, obviously, high grade, heavy paper. And then, and I'm going by what I've seen, and you correct me if I'm wrong, then you fold or concertina that paper and then you mount it vertically on a board. Is that more or less the process?
That's more or less the process. You've missed a piece out in the early stages where I perhaps start with one image, but because my works are two images, one image, depending on the route that I'm going down, one image starts and then I create a second image, that the two, so it can morph from one to the other. And that process can take months. Often I'll get the first half right, but trying to get the second half right to match can be the hard work. Then once it's at that stage, the images are split into stripes and then recombined back together. And then, as you say, they are scored, folded, glued, mounted, and then hand-painted over at that point, or parts of are, in the process, and then they go out for framing.
Looking at the finished work, I'm struck by how precise and painstaking it must be to create. And I want you to give us an overview in a bit more detail of what the technique involves from a practical perspective, including, having been in your studio, some information about the really interesting equipment that you have developed, which is very specific and bespoke for your work.
Right. So the basic making process is that the paper gets scored and then folded and then laid out on a form that holds it in place while I glue it, and then the backing board is glued on. So when I first started, all of that work was done by hand, particularly the scoring work and the folding work. And the inconsistencies annoyed me because being a hand done, it was very hard to keep it all right. And my failure rate was extraordinarily high. So as time went on, I found ways to cure the problem. One involved purpose building a piece of computer controlled machinery to help me put the scores in straight. So I have a machine that does the scores for me, but the rest is hand done still. The folding, I have a guide to work with, but it's still hand folded. I now have a much more rigid form for holding everything in place while I glue it. But again, that was one I designed and had to actually get a company here to help make it for me. That has really pulled the precision and made things run a lot better. I'd like to say it's got rid of the failures completely, but it hasn't, but it's certainly got them down to a manageable level.
And I can tell by listening to you that there are quite a few points along the way where things could turn quite quickly to custard. Mm. Going right back to the beginning though, Mark, where do you get your inspiration from? Because the image itself that you start with is obviously critical to the effectiveness of the multi-plane medium. So where do these ideas come from for what this is going to look like?
So twofold. One is the experience that I've gained making them. So I now have a better idea of what works and what doesn't. And two is, and I'm a firm believer in it, that an artist's most important tool in making anything is their eyes. And I spend a lot of time looking. Phones are wonderful now with a camera. You've always got a camera with you. It doesn't have to be great quality. Just catch the idea as you see them. Shadows on walls, textures on a building with peeling paint, other artwork. It's just things that I see around the place. And sometimes they're fleeting images, especially things like shadows and that.
And do they sit on your phone for months and months and years and years?
Yes, and I would say, of the ones that get there, probably 20% of them ever make it even partway down the exploratory thing. But the ideas build up, and sometimes it's a piece of this idea and a piece of that idea. They gurgle around in your brain and all of a sudden something pops out.
Right.
But I'm always on the lookout for interesting colour combinations, interesting patterns, interesting textures.
I'm here with Mark Cowden. Stay with us for Snapshot, our rundown on what's on in the Dunedin art scene, but let's hear more about Mark's career. Mark, 10 years on, your work now has a loyal following, and I think that we can safely say that after all that trial and error and building of machinery, you are now a real artist. How confident were you when you retired 10 years ago and decided to give this a go, that it might turn into yet another career for you?
I was surprised at just how well it turned into another career for me. I do, as I said before, about the universe conspiring, I do think that there was a little bit of that in there.
How did you get started? When did you sell your first work?
I was doing some photographic work. So I'd been doing a little bit with one of the local galleries in Dunedin, De Novo, and I showed them one of my early multiplane works and said, "What do you think?" And they went, haven't seen anything like that before. And I'm a member of the Otago Art Society as well. And they said, "The Art Society has an exhibition coming up. Put one in there and see what happens." From my design experience going back, it's called prototyping. Put one out and see what happens. But anyway, I put one into the art exhibition and it sold on the pre-opening night. And I got a couple of orders for more ones.
You're onto something.
And I thought, this is promising. And of course, the art gallery, the Novo Gallery, said, yes, we're onto something here. So yes, we'll take a couple, Mark, and see what happens. So and away it went. The rest is history.
Indeed. And I think you've now got a solid market in Auckland, represented by Flagstaff Gallery in Devonport. How did you establish yourself there?
Well, that was just purely a case of banging on the door and asking if they would be interested in taking some of my artwork. And again, they looked at it and went, a little bit different. We'll give it a go, see what happens. And found that there was an interest in the work. So
again, all of those years of sales training finally came
handy. All of those years of sales training. I must admit, before I knocked on their door, I did walk around a lot of galleries and go, this gallery's not right, this one's right. I think some of that industry of experience of judging where was the right place for it.
Yeah. And I think you've obviously been very successful in that regard, because I think you've got works in the UK, the USA, Singapore, Australia, Fiji, And the Chatham Islands, of all places.
Yes, the Chatham Islands one is one that came out of an Auckland art fair that I was at. So it was one of the few times when I actually deal with the customer directly. And it was one of those of, I don't think we've got any. Well, we haven't got any there that I know about up until that point. I may well have other works around. I say I don't know where the majority of them have gone.
They obviously have universal appeal. I think you'd mentioned before about the Auckland Art Fair. Was that Art in the Park?
That was Art in the Park, yes.
And you had quite a successful early run there, I believe.
Yes. Art in the Park, the very first year it was ever held was just after COVID. So I'd gone through the COVID experience thinking, well, there's the end of a very promising art career as we all sat at home and did nothing, without realising that everybody else was sitting at home looking at their walls thinking, I need some artwork to hang on my walls. So after COVID, art had quite a renaissance. Not long, say, after the opening thing, we had the first ever Art in the Park. So they had no idea of how Art in the Park was going to go. It was my first art fair, so I had no idea how it was going to go. I managed to sell everything I took up there out before the fair was half over. So that was
That's very good going.
A pretty good start for me, yes.
Indeed.
And at one point, you know, we had people queued wanting to buy the same work, and I had to say to people, sorry, look, you have to make up your mind, because if you don't want to buy it, this person will buy it.
Sales technique coming into play yet again. And I think too, Mark, I'm aware that you had a corporate collector who has bought quite a few of your works over the years. Tell us what you can about that.
Well, yes, that was an interesting person, and I, for a while, had my suspicions as to who it was, but all I knew was we have this corporate collector. So I'm not even sure exactly how many works he bought of mine, but he was a large real estate mogul with corporate offices in Wellington, and he hung a lot of my work around, or made it available for his tenants to hang around his buildings, as well as probably having some in his own collection. I did meet him eventually, a very interesting gentleman who unfortunately is no longer with us.
Right. What a fantastic opportunity for your work to get exposure.
Oh, yes, very much so.
Office environments. You've been very successful, Mark, with your 2D work. Have you ever thought about moving into a different dimension? You've been doing this for 10 years ago. It must be time to change it up. You must be getting bored by now, surely, with a history such as yours.
Well, there's plenty of scope for change. Yes, I've thought about 3D. I've thought about working in stainless steel, but stainless steel is hard in two meanings of the word. I like paper. Paper does what I tell it to. Stainless steel is a serious fight. But I've done a little bit of 3D work, and I've even thought of 4D work and bringing time into the equation of works that morph and change over time. There's still a lot in the lenticular field that I can play with, lots of different shapes, different styles. Some lenticular involves using three images, not two, perhaps using cut-out paper, rolled paper. There's hundreds of options, and I every now and then go off and have a play for a while and end up with this result that is certainly not ready for market, shall I say.
Yes.
But they're all sitting there as ideas that I come back and play with off and on, and often I find it's when you come back months later you'll pick them up again and the brain has been working on them in the background over that period, and all of a sudden you get the you see the breakthrough that you need to make it work.
Yes. So now that you have your technique down pat, as it were, and you're not having quite so many turn to custard moments, how long on average would it take you to finish one of your works?
Right. Well, there's two parts to me, the way I make works. So first of all, my works are multiple. So once I've come up with an idea, I make more than one of them. They're normally limited to a limited edition of 20. So the making up stage, I know I had one particular work that took me 6 months to get it from concept to the point that I was actually happy with it. And again, that was a good example of that case of coming back to it. I just came back to it one day, picked it up, and the adjustments that I made were very, very minor, a matter of millimetres, and all of a sudden it worked. But up until then, I just could not get the concept to come together. So 6 months, anything from a few hours to months coming up with the concept. And then for each one I physically make, and the process is broken down over several days because I have to let things settle in the process, it's probably all up about 4 or 5 hours work. Unfortunately, one of my failure points is right at the very end. So if I'm having one of those, normally it ends up throwing away probably in the vicinity of $100 worth of materials and probably 4 or 5 hours worth of time. And that happens, usually say, right at the very end.
Not for the faint-hearted, but obviously.
No.
If there's anyone listening or who is intrigued in Mark Carden's work, get yourself to Gallery De Novo in Dunedin or Art Box or Form Galleries in Christchurch, Exhibitions Gallery in Wellington or Flagstaff in Devonport, and you can see what all the fuss is about. Mark, thank you for being our guest on Sightlines today. We look forward to seeing more of your work in private and public collections across the Motu.
That's right. Thank you, Sally.
And now here's Linda Cook with the latest on what's happening in the local art scene. This is Snapshot. Linda, what's on at DPAG this month?
Hi, Sally. DPAG currently has an exhibition of Imogen Taylor's paintings. The exhibition's titled From Behind. These paintings were produced over a period of 4 years, both here, Aotearoa and London. They reference figuration and formal abstraction. The view's fragmented, not only in the painterly compositions, but also through the installation of the works. Taylor disrupts the spatial dynamics of conventional figurative abstraction using soft curves that suggest intimate liaisons. As a gay female artist, she's engaging with modernist European abstraction, which was once dominated by masculinity, to convey a strong abstract language from a gay woman's perspective and an injection of humour.
An interesting exhibition, and I believe the works have been hung in an interesting way.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this. The gallery has been divided into separate spaces using half-stud walls on which the paintings are hung, and they protrude above the wall. This immediately challenges regular conventions of institutional galleries, as the paintings skew our expectations that they should sit bang in the middle of a wall.
Oh, we love a bit of challenging of convention.
Yeah.
What about the local dealer galleries, Linda? What's on there?
Well, I was at RDS last week. They're opposite the railway station down the bottom of
Stuart Street,
thank you. They have an exhibition of 5 emerging sculptural artists from the Dunedin School of Art. The exhibition was assembled by Scott Eady. He's a lecturer from Dunedin School of Art. They've titled the exhibition The Next Generation. It runs from June through to 4th of July.
Another one not to miss. And then I think there's quite a bit going on in Dowling Street.
Brett McDowell, as usual, has always got a lively show, and he's got Rick Killeen this month. And his title for the exhibition is Inside Out. This runs through June. While you're on Dowling Street, I see Blue Oyster Project Space are having a series of lectures coming up on how to exhibit your works. So keep your eye out for that.
Indeed. And what's happening in the wider region?
If you're driving southward, I recommend calling in at East and Southland Gallery with its lovely architecture. On until 21st of June is an exhibition of Port Chalmers artists David Elliott's work. The exhibition covers a range of representation and media and is titled Wind and Waves. Elliott's illustration and sculptural forms magically transport you to another world, one of sea creatures and ships, all no doubt influenced by his living close proximity to the sea in Port Chalmers.
And if you're making the trip down to Gore, what else is on in Eastern Southland?
In an exhibition adjacent to the main gallery is a Timaru artist, Michael Armstrong. These are a mixed-media work which move between figuration and abstraction, incorporating vibrant colour and humour. But also on permanent display at the gallery is a phenomenal collection of ethnographic indigenous carvings and images which were donated from John Money's collection. And these include some fantastic Teoscoon works.
Thanks, Linda. And thanks to you, our listeners. If you'd like to hear today's show again or listen to previous shows, you can find us on the Otago Access Radio and DPAG Society websites, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to join the Society, you can also find a form on our website or join at the Dunedin Public Art Gallery reception. And remember, the Society members enjoy a generous 20% discount in the fantastic gallery shop, which is a great place to visit if you're looking for art books, quality homeware and unique gift ideas. Thanks to contributor Linda Cook and producer and DPAG Society President Jonathan Quayle. Join us again next month for another dive into the visual arts in Dunedin and beyond. I'm Sally McMillan, and you've been listening to Sightlines.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.